Have you walked the Camino de Santiago? If you can answer yes to that question, I would love to hear from you and interview you for the podcast so together we can help our fellow pilgrims have the time of their lives on the way to Santiago. So please get in touch via our Facebook page, which is Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, or our Instagram page, which is pilgrims_podcast, and we can set up a time to get that interview done. And as a thank you for getting in touch, I will send you an e-copy of my international best-selling memoir, which is called The Only Way is West. One of the most recent five-star reviews is from Michael Rowley on Amazon, and he says, "What a wonderful story from start to finish. Laughter and tears in equal measure. I recommend this book for pilgrims everywhere." Martin T. writes on the 23rd of April, 2021, "I really enjoyed the honesty of Brad's Camino. He really brought his experiences to life through his writing style. I would definitely recommend this book to anyone looking to do the Camino." So if you have walked the Camino and you'd like a book, like they said, which is, I think Martin T's title was Best Read on the Camino. Well, I think that's a bold statement. I wouldn't go see it's the best read, but I think it could be a good one. As a thank you, I'll send you a copy of that. So please get in touch. And with no further ado, it is time to get into this week's episode. Here we go. It's the searchers. Hello there once again, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, where we talk about planning, preparation and packing for walking the road to Santiago, as well as tips, tricks and hacks to make your journey along the way a lot more enjoyable. If you are a first-time pilgrim, you are definitely in the right place because you're going to learn lots and lots and lots. And if you are a returning pilgrim looking to refine your routine, you may also learn something. So with no further ado, we're going to jump straight into this week's episode, and we have Brian Horn all the way from Ohio, US of A.
Hello, Bradley.
How are you doing, Brian?
I am doing fantastic. How about you?
I'm all the better for hearing your lovely American accent, and also because I know you're about to tell us about the Camino that you've walked this summer, the Camino Portuguese. Yes. I think you were just behind me as well, because I think my wife and I were about a week or so in front of you. But anyway, it's not about me. It's about you, Brian. So when you eventually victorious stride into Santiago and you pick up your Compostela in that pilgrim office and they ask you that big question, what was your motive for walking the Camino? Religious, non-religious, adventurous, others? What did you say and why did you walk 500 miles across Spain?
Okay, well, I actually chose the option that was kind of a mixture of both. I am a person of faith, so the religious aspect of the Camino was certainly appealing. And we walked into Santiago on the 24th of July. We're there on the 25th during the Feast of St. James. So that aspect of it was certainly a special thing for me. Like I said, as a person of faith and being able to experience that part of the pilgrimage. But there were also a lot of, I would say, events in my life going on that kind of called me to the Camino over the few years prior to walking. If I kind of back up a little bit to maybe like 2018, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. We were in the middle of an adoption. And so just some big things going on in our life. And then obviously we get to 2020. We have this big pandemic going on in the world. In the midst of that, that adoption that we were working on, we actually lost a daughter in the middle of that. About 4 days before we were scheduled to fly out to Colombia to pick up our daughter, she passed away unexpectedly. And we continued in that process then, and we ended up adopting another daughter. While we were in Colombia, my father-in-law was diagnosed with cancer. So all these events just kind of seemed to culminate with me walking this Camino, something I had always wanted to do, but I had always pushed aside. And I think finally just living through the pandemic and seeing how that kind of put life at a standstill and said, hey, you know, I've got to go grab this dream and do it while I can. So that's kind of the events that led us up to actually walking.
Wow. Well, first of all, can I just say thank you for doing this interview? Thank you for being so brave to tell the whole story as well. And my admiration extends to you for getting through everything you've been through. And yeah, I mean, I take my hat off to you, Brian, because you're still walking tall. And yes, the Camino is no better place, maybe, to process
Yes.
all of these challenging events. And I'm lost for words
Absolutely.
because I just feel so, yeah, I'm just taken aback. I was not
Yeah.
expecting this to be the beginning of the call. So again,
Sure.
just to say thank you for being so brave, and I'm sure you're going to inspire a lot of people in the course of this conversation, like you've inspired me in the first 5 minutes. You know that you haven't let life shrivel you and suck the enthusiasm and hope and zest for life that you had. It's actually made you want to go and do things, which is great that you're a leading
Yes.
example for people who experience these kind of challenges, because life isn't perfect. We all know that, sadly. And if anything, the last few years, you know, just talking about the pandemic, I mean, but you've had so many things on top of that, and my heart goes out to you, brother. It really, really
Well, thank
does.
you.
It
Thank you.
really, really does. Oh my God. Right. So you're on the Camino. You've gone there to, I guess, to get the most out of life, to not let it knock you down,
Yes.
to keep walking, to stand stronger, to be a hero, not a victim,
Correct.
which is great, and I love that. So it doesn't feel right to start talking about a backpack or shoes or a phone, because that's
Sure.
just so irrelevant right now. So let's say you're on the Camino, so you ended up going with your friend.
Correct.
Okay, and was that
Yep.
the plan all along, or was
Well,
that?
actually, no, I had planned on I'm a high school teacher. And we actually got out earlier last year. Our schedule was different than my own kids. My kids go to a different school. So I had like 3 weeks in there that I was going to be done with school, and my kids were still going to be in school. So I was like, well, that's the perfect time. I can go. They're still in school. It won't be so, so much on my wife to be gone. And then at that time in May, with the pandemic, Europe wasn't open yet. So I didn't get to go. But, thought, well, maybe we'll go this summer. And my friend Jeff, who I went with, I taught with him for 13, 14 years. We're really good friends. We had always talked about, hey, let's go do the Camino. But, I had kids, he had kids. It was always something we just didn't go do it. And so with me having to delay my trip, he was available in July. I called him up one day and I said, hey, let's go do this thing, man. We've talked about it forever. Let's just go do it. It took a little convincing, but then he said, sure, I'm on board. So that's how I ended up walking with my friend Jeff.
Right, okay, so you're with Jeff, you're obviously clearing your head a little bit, I guess. That's you know, for want of a better word. How did you feel when you first got on the Camino after everything you've been through?
The first few days were really, really tough. Like I said, we walked in July, so that was right when the Delta variant was starting to go crazy again in Europe. And so it just created a lot of anxiety, I think, about what each day was going to look like. And on top of the, like you said, processing, you do a lot of processing on the Camino. And then you throw this other variable in there with testing and vaccinations and all this stuff that's going on. And the first couple of days, I just couldn't shut my mind down because I was worried about what was going to happen when I get to the next place. Are they going to let me stay there? What happens if I test positive? All these things. And so a couple of days in, like I said in the intro, I'm a person of faith. And there's this scripture that just kept coming to mind, and it says, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. And I remember, I think it was the second day, it might have been the third day, but I was walking and that just kept popping in my mind, like, you're here on the Camino. This is a lifelong dream that you're fulfilling, and you're worried about tomorrow. Like, just live in the moment and enjoy this experience. And when I was able to do that and kind of shut my mind off and rest in that peace, like, don't worry about tomorrow, then the Camino experience really came alive.
I mean, I experienced similar anxieties as well. When you first get there, when I first got there this summer, it was like, first of all, is my vaccination certificate going to get me into the country? Thank God it did. And then it's like, if I go and stay in a hotel or an albergue with so many other people, am I going to catch it there? Am I going to end up in quarantine? And it does take a while to shake off those anxieties and actually get into the flow of just walking every day. And I've done Caminos pre-pandemic as well, so I know the difference. And but this was your first one, wasn't it, Brian?
Yes, it was the first one.
So it took you a little while to shake off those pre-Camino anxieties, those pandemic fueled anxieties as well. And so it took you a few days. Once you've done that, how did you start to feel on the road? I mean, were you thinking about things that happened to you back home? Was it just a time for you to be able to forget those things and, like you said, stop worrying about tomorrow or even yesterday and the things that happened?
I really just tried to, like I said, once I kind of shut my mind off to all those other things, just walk each day, and I processed, something different each day. I kind of took, I have four children, and then my wife at home. So I like one day for each of them, I kind of specially dedicated to think about them and pray for them. So that was kind of the middle 5 days there. And that really helped me to just focus on, focus on something and think about them and process all those things.
What I like to do on this podcast is try to put myself in the shoes of every different single type of pilgrim there can be. And there will be other parents walking the Camino and other parents that leave their kids behind. And I think what you're saying there is a really nice way to remember them and to take them with you in your heart and your soul, if not physically.
Correct.
And just what would you say to, I mean, what can other parents do? What was a prayer you said? Was there something you said in particular? Was you just think about them? What did you do exactly every day for each of your kids?
First, I would say, like, if you're a parent, like, one of the things that always held me back from walking was my, devotion to my kids, and well, I can't leave them for a few weeks. That's hard on them. But really, in the end, I look at it that I was doing it for them. I mean, certainly I was doing it for myself, but I feel like I became a better person, a better parent along the way. And so it is tough to pull yourself away from your family, but if that's something you're wrestling with, man, I would just say just go do it, and it'll make you a better parent. But each day, I took a picture of each of my kids, picture of my wife, and so each day I would just carry that picture along with me. And whenever I'd get in my pocket to get out some change to buy a coffee or something, that picture was always there, and reminded me to have them in my prayers. It wasn't necessarily a specific thing that I said, but just that I was dedicating that day to them. I left a letter at home that corresponded with that day. So whichever day I was walking for them, they got a letter at home, and just some, I shared some things with them in that letter about my love for them and that sort of thing. So that's how I went about it.
So you purposely brought them into your consciousness while you were walking whenever you could. That's a nice thought. Silly little things, isn't it? I mean, like, what was it? I mean, this is a little bit different, but I mean, my wife went out. My wife and I have been together pretty much every single night since we've ever met. And then I can't remember exactly where it was. I think she went to a show or something and stayed over her friends. And I actually just picked up a picture of her on our mantelpiece and gave it a kiss. And I was like, oh, that felt nice. And like it does. So that absence does make the heart grow fonder in many ways. And that's another thing to remember, isn't it, as well, when you are leaving loved ones behind. And And like you said, ultimately, you're going to go back a better person and a better parent. So that's a lovely way to look at it. I mean, so there's many hard things we've talked about so far. I mean, obviously, the massive challenges that life threw at you before you left, as well as the pandemic, the breaking that emotional attachment that you've got with your kids and your wife as well. That's the hard part. Now, obviously, those are the emotional things. What about the physical things? It's not something we do every day. We don't just, you know, we might get up and walk to our car. We might get up and walk to the shop, but we don't get up and walk 20K or 14 miles every day, do we? So how did you adjust to that?
For me, I was actually surprised. Like, the physical portion of it was not that bad. I mean, obviously, the Portuguese is a shorter Camino. You know, we walked for 11 days, but still certainly challenging. But I had walked a lot before I left. I actually did, during the pandemic, I did a virtual Camino Francés. So I walked a lot before. So I felt like the physical part, I guess I was expecting it to be a little bit more challenging. I mean, there were a couple days where it was really hot and that sort of thing. But in terms of the physical part, like, I felt like that wasn't the most challenging part. It was the mental part of it, the anxiety and those things.
So getting over the anxieties was the hardest point.
Yeah.
But why did you choose the Portuguese or the Frances or the Inglés, or what was the reason?
Sure. A couple things. I mean, one, it is a shorter route. So like I said, I kind of had a limited time, you know, leaving my family and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then I also like the fact that we started in Porto, so I felt it had like a definite beginning and end to it, rather than just hopping on the Francais somewhere randomly. You know, it gave a good definition to it. So I like that about it.
Yeah, it's pretty much out the airport, and then you can – it's a short journey into the city, isn't it? And Porto is a beautiful place to start.
Yes,
well.
Beautiful.
So we spoke so far. So you're in Porto, and what was your experience of for those that maybe are worried about the language barrier? Did you find that most of the Portuguese spoke pretty good English?
Yes. Yeah. In Portugal, their English was really widespread. I happen to also speak Spanish.
Oh, great.
So whenever English didn't work, I kind of, you know, used my Spanish and they used their Portuguese, and we didn't have any issues getting along.
Yeah. I mean, you find that most of the time the Portuguese speak really, really good English. And in terms of the terrain, you found it pretty easy?
I did. You know, starting out there very flat along the coast, and then we walked up to the border and cut over to Tui and went up the central the rest of the way. So we didn't do the full coastal route. But yeah, there are a couple of days where a little bit of up and down, but overall pretty good terrain, I would say.
Ah, so you actually went along the coast for the first part and then cut inside and then went through the central route. Okay, that's a good idea as well. So then you get a bit of best of both worlds, a bit of beach and a bit of the forest as well. Because once you get into Galicia across that border, it's beautiful. It's really, really nice. And like I said, it sounds like you were just like a week or two behind my wife and I. So, okay, so we're talking about some really, really hard times so far. And you said, you know, the anxieties of obviously walking during pandemic times were hard to kind of to quieten. And I definitely felt a similar thing. And one of the worst things was, well, when I don't think they've got it anymore, but when we walked in the summer, it's like if you caught it when you walked, you have to quarantine while you're away. But I think that's been removed now. It certainly has for us Brits. I'm not sure what the requirements are for Americans returning, but obviously that can change from month to month, week to week. Yeah. So it's probably not wise for us to comment on that. But what from the hardest to the highest, what was the highest moment? What was the special day that stands out? A moment on the Camino when you felt on top of the world, unassailable high?
You know, this was hard because obviously there were a lot of things that I could say, but for me, I think the highest point was walking into the plaza, seeing the cathedral. I had never been to Santiago before. My friend had, but I'd never been there. And I think it was such a special experience because it was like really the culmination of a lot of years of dreaming, always wanting to walk the Camino. And like I said, these things I'd been through over the last few years, it was like that pinnacle of, man, you've thought about this, you've wanted to do this, and now you're here. And it's like those times in movies, you know, when time just slows down and it seems like it's in slow motion. And I just remember standing in the plaza, just staring at the cathedral, and just thinking, man, you finally arrived. And yeah, just really, really hard to put into words.
Yeah, it's that moment when you walk into the plaza and you see everyone celebrating. You might see people laying down because they're so tired. You see people jumping for joy. You see cyclists holding their bikes in the air. Some people that have been walking with dogs, they might be stroking their dog. It's just such a mixture of emotions, isn't it? It's
It is, yes.
like a happiness that you've done it. And you've, you know, some pride as well, but also some sadness that you that it's over. And let's talk about that when it's over. What, how could you make the, how did you make the adjustment to, I mean, obviously you had to go back to being a parent, a full-time dad and a husband. So yeah, I mean, how did you make the adjustment from walking every day to going back to, well, I guess it was summer holidays still for you, right?
I do. I work part-time during the summer, so I did kind of go back to work the next week, but it's a really low-stress job. I work in the summer, so it wasn't too bad. But I found it really hard. I mean, obviously my wife understood, you know, allowed me to go on this Camino and really supported me. So she understood, but it, you know, it's like so many of your guests talk about, they come back and really people that have never done the Camino, they just don't understand, nor should we expect them to understand what we've done. And I found that hard, that, you know, people were like, well, how was your vacation? How was your hike? And they didn't really get that it had been 2 weeks that had changed my life, that had transformed who I was, you know. So that was really hard. I would say it took a month or two really to process all that and to come to terms with that, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing that you've come back to a low stress environment as well, because I mean I've done Caminos when I've gone back to work the next day. I've done Caminos when I've been working on the Camino, which I regret to say it was a mistake. Just silly little things like learning lyrics, but still your head is still in a workspace. And this time I came back and like you had a low stress scenario. I was going to be starting a new job in 5 to 6 days after coming back. But the thing is that I feel like maybe you, I feel like on the Camino, we develop good habits. We can develop good habits. I don't know if you agree with me.
Yes, I do.
But one of those habits for me was, and I probably bore people with this in this podcast, but detaching from social media, turning, one of the ones I made sure this time was because it was just like not, I would often read the newspapers when I read the Camino because I like to read the Spanish newspapers. Because this time I just detached from everything because it was part of that pandemic anxiety, you know, like so many cases, so many this. And I just turned the news off and it was great turning off the news. And so that was one of the habits that I developed. Actually, I feel happier not reading the newspaper, not seeing the news. And that was one of the habits I've kind of an intention that I set. And I think when we come home, it's good to have a few days to set those intentions so they do become a part of the new everyday you, which is what we try and shed a skin on the Camino. We try and shed a layer of some kind and replace a bad habit with a good habit. And I think that's why I would recommend coming home, taking your time before you go back into your everyday life and setting some positive change, some good intention. And like I say, you were probably able to do that. What can you think of a good habit you may have developed on the Camino?
Well, similar to you too, I did shut off all the news that, you know, like the first couple of days
It's
I
draining.
think I was watching the news to try to be informed, but it was just feeding all that anxiety. And oh
Exactly.
man, the cases are exploding in that town that we're going to be to in 2 days. They have restrictions, and so when I shut that off, yeah, that made a big difference. Another thing we did, my friend and I, we spent a couple days in Madrid afterwards, and so I think that helped to just to kind of ease you back into to life. And it wasn't like we walked in and then we got on a plane and went home. Kind of had a buffer there to
Great, yeah.
process some more and do that. So that I would recommend that if people are able to give yourself a little time there.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to sit back and, you know, in a plaza somewhere over a nice cold beer or coffee and Napolitana. You know, I saw the Napolitanas on your Instagram profiles. Like, yeah, he's definitely been enjoying the good things. And just to actually sit there and talk about it and, you know, go back over the old memories, look at the photos. So, yeah, great advice there. I mean, we talked about advice about, you know, one, developing a good habit, setting that intention, such as the news. What about if you're going to give advice to someone that's never walked the Camino and they say, "Ah, Brian, you know, like I'm thinking of walking. I'm going to walk it. What's the one piece of advice you'd give for me for walking the Camino?"
Yeah, I would say just don't have expectations, which is really easy to say, but really hard to do. But just really try to go in with not expecting what you're going to get out of it, or you know, expecting certain things out of yourself. Just let each day unfold. Let the Camino unfold itself in your own walk and in your own life. And like I said, after those, I didn't take my own advice, I think, there at the beginning. But when I began to do that, just not have expectations for the day, get up, put on my backpack, walk, whatever happens this day happens, then I think I began to have that true Camino experience.
So really what you're saying is don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. In other words, right? Really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's great advice as well, because it was a mentality that I was able to take on eventually and definitely helped me forget those anxieties we talked about.
Yes.
And okay. So one piece of advice for caring for your feet then as well.
For caring for my feet, mine would be socks. I use merino wool socks, and then just change them whenever you need to. And that was different every day. I mean, some days when it was hot, I might have changed my socks 3 or 4 times. Mm. Some days I wore the same pair the whole day. Just listen to your feet and get some good socks.
Yeah, it's definitely really, really good thing just to do that little bit of extra work, because it will save you a lot of pain down the line.
Yes.
Clean socks, get them on, change them when you feel like you need it. Yeah, good stuff. And that's advice that, you know, that can never be heard too much. What surprised you most about yourself and the Camino, Brian?
I think what surprised me about myself was I'm a what you call an extroverted introvert.
Okay.
I like being with people, but I don't care if I ever talk to them. If that makes sense. I can be in a room full of people for hours and be happy if I never talk to them, which is kind of different, but that's just my personality. So I think it surprised me how willing I was just to sit down at a table and talk to somebody, you know, in an albergue or on the street, to strike up conversations that I wouldn't normally in my everyday life. So, you know, thinking back on that, that was maybe something I discovered about myself, that I was able to do that and have taken back with me now, trying to be a little bit more aware of that and do that in my everyday life.
Again, let's put ourselves in the shoes of a pilgrim that maybe wants to be a little bit more outgoing. How do you start up a conversation with someone you don't know on the Camino?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easier on the Camino, because
for sure
it's easy to say, "Hey, where are you from? Where'd you start?" So there's a lot of those, you know, simple little lead-in questions, and then you just kind of get to know the person a little bit and start to learn a little bit more about their story. And some of it, it's a 2-minute conversation, you're done. And some of it, you know, you might sit there for an hour. But
I mean, yeah, it might sound like a silly question, but like I say it because my wife is exactly that person. Like she'll be rehearsing things to say to people and questions to ask people before she goes to meet them.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, just relax. Everything's going to happen naturally. But she'll be rehearsing it. And for people that are a little bit socially anxious like that, I think it's useful to know, you know, what are some opening questions? Where are you going today? Where did you start today? Just simple little things like that. And that can often open the conversation to go down any kind of, you know, many different roads, can't it? So,
yes.
And that is an example of the Camino bringing the best out of people as well, I think, you know, as well as the worst, when you're tired and you haven't eaten and you haven't drunk.
Yeah.
And a fly comes into your head and near your head and you just feel so irritable and angry because of, you know, irrationally angry because of such a silly thing. But yeah.
Yes.
okay. Hidden gems. Any place on the Camino that was a hidden gem? What surprised you?
It's not really a hidden gem, so maybe I'm cheating on this question a little bit, but Porto was just an amazing city, which
It
I mean,
is.
I a lot of people say that, but I don't think you really appreciate it till you're there and just see how beautiful it is, all it has to offer. So definitely, if you have time to spend an extra day there or 2 days, it's an amazing city. I'd love to go back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And in many ways, it is a hidden gem, I think, Brian, because everyone talks about Santiago, everyone talks about, I don't know, León, Pamplona, Burgos on the Comuna Francesa, maybe Lisbon, even more so. But actually, Porto is a modern, beautiful city, and you can walk around most of it as well. And, you know, down where that bridge down by the river and all the cafes and bars and the promenade. It's absolutely stunning, and the food is incredible. The people are nice. Portugal and Porto, thank you very much for creating such an amazing place. It's beautiful. So yeah, like you said, if you can get a day or two extra in Porto, that's a really, really good idea. A favorite alberg, hotel, hostel.
Mine that I put down was a De Paso Urban Hostel, and that was in Pontevedra. And it was just really, it was a modern hostel, so it wasn't, you know, maybe some of the older ones that you think of with the Raja thing, but it was a really modern place, super clean. The staff was awesome. We actually took a rest day in Pontevedra, so we were there 2 days. It just a really great facility, just really comfortable.
And there's actually quite a lot to do in Pontevedra as well.
Yeah,
Got the river
there is.
down there, and nice big city, lots of restaurants, lots of bars, lots to do and see. So yeah, great idea. So De Paso Urban Hostel in Pontevedra. Okay, is there a favorite bar, restaurant, or food you recommend?
The bar that I would recommend, well, I don't know if it's really a bar, more of a pastry shop called Caprichos, and it was in Caldas de Reis. And actually stayed there on my birthday. I actually turned 40 walking the Camino. So I was in Caldas de Reis there. So I would recommend the croissant con chocolate. And they had all sorts of other good stuff. We went there a couple times while we were there, but Caprichos.
That's Caprichos in Caldas de Reyes. Caldas de Reyes. Caldas de Reyes. Reyes. Caprichos. Yes, sounds like a good recommendation. And the chocolate croissants, and like you said, the Napolitana. You can put away four or five, six of them for breakfast when you walk in, right? So,
I think I ate my weight in those during the trip.
and happy birthday as well, by the way. Happy
Oh, thank you.
40th. Happy 40th. No better way to celebrate.
Correct.
Caldas de Reyes. So I've got some funny memories about that place. There was a guy that. Just a very short story. There was a guy that was potentially the world's worst waiter, and
Oh boy.
every time you well, me and my wife walked in and we said, "Hey, can we get a seat?" and he showed us his list of kind of like orders that he had to fulfill, and there was only about three on his little bit of paper that he'd scribbled down, he'd handwritten them. He said, "Well, you know," and he'd showed us, you know, his little scrap piece of paper. "Well, I'm really busy," and he showed us his little bit of paper, and as I say, "I can't guarantee I'm going to be able to serve you soon." You know, as if to say, the service is going to be terrible, just so you know. But you know, we just sat down anyway, and you know, thought this is going to be funny. And it was so funny to see the amount of people walking into this restaurant, sitting there for a long time without being served, and then walking out. And then he had some guy who was new working with him, and he was taking the glasses off the table and throwing them actually into the bin. Like, I was like, you know, when you think someone's going to come out and say, "This is all just a joke, you know, this is just, you know,
Yeah,
we
like a
have
hidden camera.
hidden camera," yeah, hidden camera. Like, the guy was picking the glasses and throwing them into the bin. I thought, surely someone's going to tell him to stop doing that. And then, funnily enough, some guy came and sat down, didn't get served, and then went and got food from a fast food shop and brought it to his table and started eating it. And this was our evening, Saturday evening in Caldas de Reyes. So thank you for reminding me of that very, very
Yeah,
strong.
I'm
The
glad I didn't
world's
hit that
worst
restaurant.
waiter. It was so funny to watch. And we got a pizza after about an hour and a half. But honestly, the entertainment, just sitting there watching that, it was just just priceless, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to jump into quick fire round. I'm going to ask you some Camino quickies. So short, sharp, quick answers would be lovely. So your favorite Camino blog, vlog, book, and or film?
It is a vlog on YouTube called Spirit in Nature, and the people's names are Kristen and Peter.
Lovely. Is that about the Camino particularly, or is it?
Yeah, it's about the, it's kind of a little documentary about the Camino, and it incorporates, you know, about their personal journey and transformation.
Fantastic. I haven't heard of that one. That's a great recommendation. Thank you. Social media personality or account that may be worth following?
Lorenzo Peregrino.
Lorenzo Peregrino. Thank you. Another one we've not heard. Great stuff. Okay. Favorite food and or drink on the Camino?
Well, my Instagram says it all. It's got to be the Napolitana de Chocolate and the Café con Leche.
Guilty as charged. No better breakfast. yeah. One thing you wished you'd packed?
Some soap for hand washing clothes.
Ah, you like to do it the hard way. Great stuff.
Yeah.
A quote or mantra for tough times on the road, which I think you may have already addressed.
Yep. Don't worry about tomorrow. You got it.
Love it. A guilty pleasure you may have carried with you.
I don't know if it was really a guilty pleasure, but pictures of my family, I would say. Lovely. I really didn't take anything else, like unnecessary things, so pictures of my family.
A Spanish product or shop that came in useful?
The grocery. Not a specific one, but just the grocery in general, everyday thing.
Yeah, it's great to get in there and get a few bits and bobs, and that can keep you fueled for the whole day. Save you a bit of money along the way as well, because you can end up spending a small fortune in eating out. So that's great. A Camino app or internet resource you use before, during, and or after the Camino?
The Camino Ninja. Camino Ninja app.
Camino Ninja. You are very, very pioneering here, Brian. Lots of stuff we've never heard before. So thank you very much.
Good.
This is awesome. Excellent stuff. I actually saw the guy's sticker all along the Camino this time. Did you see his sticker along the Camino?
Yeah, we saw it. A lot of the albergues that we stayed in actually had a little thing on their bulletin board for the Camino Ninja.
But I didn't see any ninjas, anyone dressed in a ninja
suit. No, I didn't see any ninjas. They were hiding.
Brian, feel free to elaborate a little bit more during this next part. So,
okay.
Many believe the Camino has angels, the Camino provides, that the Camino has a spirit and magic energy you won't find anywhere else on the planet. Is it the ley lines? Is it the thousands, potentially millions of pilgrims that have walked before us? Nobody knows. But do you have any stories from the Camino that show that magic and spirit is still alive? Someone that maybe inspired you, a story that could persuade someone to walk the Camino who thinks they're not going to walk it?
The story that came to mind when I was looking at this question was before I left for the Camino, I reserved everything ahead of time just with the pandemic. So I did a lot through booking.com, and I had received a message from Booking that one of the albergues wanted to cancel my reservation. And I was like, well, that's weird. But I looked at it, and then it said, if you don't want to cancel, just don't worry about it. Don't do anything. So I was like, okay. It happened to be the place where I was going to stay on my birthday. So I was like, well, I picked it out for a reason. I don't want to cancel it. And then the first couple of days that we were walking, I got another message that they were trying to cancel. And I couldn't figure out why. And again, that anxiety thing starts kicking up. Like, well, and when I get there, am I going to be able to stay there? They won't respond to my messages. Like I said, I speak Spanish, so I emailed him in Spanish, and I didn't get a response. So then we're in Pontevedra, staying at the hostel, and I asked the guy there, I said, do you know anything about this next town, like why they might want to cancel my reservation? And he's like, no, it's the same restrictions, you know, it's the same region, there shouldn't be anything different. And he was like, but I know a lady there that runs a hostel, maybe she could help me out. And, you know, as the story would turn, of course, it was the place where I was supposed to stay that he knew this lady. So he calls her up and gets the whole situation, you know, fixed in like 5 minutes. And my reservation was fine. And we went there, had a great time staying at her hostel. So it's just those situations that, again, I was – that worry and anxiety was kicking up. But in the end, like you said, the Camino works those things out, and – you know, all those stories happen over and over, day after day. You see how those things just work themselves out, and and fix themselves along the Camino.
Just like they can fix themselves in life sometimes as well, if we just get out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's a nice story. Thanks for sharing. And just before we finish, Brian, we always like to talk about, you know, a song. You know, there's a lot of kind of good spirit and good energy, and music's a big part of that good spirit and good energy. Is there a song that kind of you remember the Camino by, that you played to get you in the mood for the Camino?
You know, actually, I never listened to music when I was on the Camino, and I never listened to music when I was like walking the year before the Camino. But if I were going to pick a song, I like classic rock. So I'm going to go with a little Bon Jovi and say Living on a Prayer. That song, when I listen to that, kind of brings back some, you know, just makes me think of the journey and just trying to make it.
And it's a great lyrics to remember as well when you kind of, when you're tired and you're halfway there, you know, you're getting there. It's a step in the right direction. So
correct.
Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. And yeah, that's a, when anything's going to give you a good bit of energy, that's it.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, Brian, in terms of how you felt before you went to the Camino and how you felt when you came home. What was the difference? What did the Camino do for you? Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually?
I mean, obviously physically the benefits of just getting up each day and walking. I mean, I feel like I said, I turned 40 and I felt the best physically I have since I was 15, maybe. But I think the spiritual and emotional benefits were more important and just really taught me to slow down. You know, I think that's a lot of why we don't have those conversations with people, because we're too busy. And I remember standing in the plaza with my friend and just looking around, and kind of like you described earlier, like over on this side, there's a group of bicigrinos and they were like tossing their buddy up in the air. Then you got a family walking in, you got some torotegrinos walking in. I remember specifically, there was a young lady sitting by herself and just weeping. And I thought to myself, you know what, each one of us, each one of the people here, all has a story of what brought them there, what caused them to walk, why they're celebrating, why they're weeping. And so I've tried to just bring that back to my real life and realize when I'm walking through my daily life, everybody has a story. I just oftentimes don't take the time to hear their story and understand. So that's what I've tried to really just become aware of and make a daily part of my life, is listening more intently to other people's stories and hearing who they really are.
That's a beautiful, beautiful way to put it, a beautiful point of view and angle to take, because I think instead of worrying about your own woes, you're worrying about other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, one of the first things they say is if you are feeling down, then go and help someone else, because that'll make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really good example of that. And a really, really admirable approach to take, Brian. So thank you for being so brave, for telling your story. Thank you for giving me and the podcast listeners that really nice takeaway to end on, because I don't think we could have a nicer ending than that. To say, you know, everyone's got their own story, haven't they? You know, and maybe. Mm-hmm. As bad as our story may be, it's great to take time to listen to other people's maybe you paradoxically draw strength from that by helping them.
Yes.
Which is nice takeaway from the podcast, Brian. So I just want to say thank you for sharing your amazing recommendations. A lot of really new info we've had here. The recommendations, the social media account, the blog, the app. The Alberg we never heard of before, the one in Pontevedra, the very, very granular recommendation of the Caprichos place in Caldas de Reyes to have a good chocolate croissant. You know, these are all excellent, excellent recommendations, as well as giving people the chance to draw a lot of strength from you, from your bravery, Brian. So thanks for choosing to be a hero rather than a victim. And I wish you and your family and your wife strength, health, and happiness moving forward.
Thank you so much, Bradley. It's really been a fun time and privilege to talk with you.
Privilege to have you on, Brian. Absolutely. The privilege actually is all mine. And it just, you know, it's customary to say, buen camino, peregrino.
Buen camino.
Wow, what an interview. I was absolutely blown away by Brian's courage to still do the Camino after everything he'd been through, and his determination to turn the negative in his life into a positive. And I hope that all of the potential pilgrims listening can, if they are in a situation where they're thinking they've got some barriers, some reasons not to go, that if Brian can do it, that you can do it too. Let Brian please be your inspiration. So Brian Horn, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and doing that and being so candid and honest and inspiring us with your bravery. Thank you so much. So as an added bonus, just before I love you and leave you on this week's podcast, I'm going to drop a little audio snippet from my book, The Only Way Is West. If you like what you hear, you can get it on Audible. You can also get it on Amazon. All you have to do is go into the search bar and search for The Only Way Is West, which has been an international bestseller in the UK, in Canada, and in Australia in humorous essays and travel writing. And it's also hit the top of the charts in the US in sports essays. So hope you enjoy it and see you again soon, everybody. Buen camino.
Chapter 7. Prayerobics. When my alarm slapped me in the face at 5 a.m., my eyes refused to open and my body played dead, pretending it hadn't heard. Thanks to the nostril tremors shaking the bed, a constant stream of noisy passers-by and a street-cleaning vehicle parked outside our ground-floor window with the diesel engine left panting interminably, I had very little sleep again. But I wasn't about to let that get me down. This was the day I was going to start my Camino, my new life, with or without sleep. I peeled open my eyes, unzipped my sleeping bag, and climbed carefully down the creaking bunk bed ladder, trying not to disturb Snorkosaurus. Waking him could see me eaten up with one flick of his tongue. Keeping my promise to Crazy Frank, I roused him with a gentle nudge on the shoulder. After a delayed response, he rolled over, opened his big brown eyes, twitched his moustache, then sprang out the bed like a frog off a lily pad. With the rest of the room still snoozing, we forced our sleeping bags into their stuff sacks, strapped them onto the bottom of our backpacks, and clicked the dorm door closed. I was grateful to have Crazy Frank's company when we took our Virgin Camino steps on the cold, dark, and eerily deserted streets. After marching through town, past shuttered shops, warring cat colonies and fleets of out-of-service buses at the station, we came to the foot of the beastly mountains we'd be clawing our way up for most of the day. Before abandoning the security of civilization, we filled our flasks at a water fountain and stuck on our woolly hats to keep warm. I dug out some biscuits for us to share on the go. As we began our ascent, Crazy Frank and I got to know a little about each other. Using a combination of signs, sound effects, and song titles, thanks to his obsession with pop music, I discovered he was a 29-year-old security guard from Budapest. His favourite band was Depeche Mode, and he was doing the Camino for the first time. Considering we didn't speak each other's language, we were getting on great, especially once I'd got the message across that I was from Basildon, the same town as his favourite band. We'd been trudging up the Pyrenean escalator for an hour or so when the darkness lifted and the sun popped its spiky blonde hair over the mountaintops. At every viewpoint where the horizon unfolded, we stopped for a moment to take it all in. layer upon layer of jagged peaks stabbing through the belly of clouds sagging over the mountainsides. Birds of prey on dawn patrol gliding gracefully in the crisp blue sky eyed up the cows, sheep and goats grazing precariously on the ridges. On grassy banks flanking the path, daisies and yellow lilies nodding in the wind kept time with the cowbells chiming in the valleys. Whenever Mother Nature's jewels came alive in our eyes, Crazy Frank stopped and communicated his feelings in the only way he knew, with misremembered lyrics from his favourite songs. All I ever wanted, all I ever needed, is here in my arms, he sang in full voice. Enjoy the silence, I responded, name-checking the Depeche Mode song to which he had charmingly sung the wrong words. Even though my legs were twice as long as his, he matched me step for step and we proved to be a good pairing. Maintaining a respectable pace, we overtook many of our fellow pilgrims, always giving them a bubbly bonjour, accompanied by a smile and a wave. Before the morning was out, we'd covered 17 kilometres on the up and had crossed the Spanish frontier. From then on, my bonjours changed to hola, or sometimes bonjour, oops, shit, I mean hola. I was a little apprehensive as we approached the border, expecting tight patrols by armed guards holding back snarling dogs, helicopters monitoring the land and CCTV hanging from the trees. But my fears did not materialise. The only thing marking these momentous steps was a vertical coffin-shaped monolith announcing our arrival into the province of Navarre. Luckily, some Italians crossed the border at the same time and duly obliged when I asked them to take a photo of us. Arrivederci, I said with a salute as we walked off in search of a suitable lunch spot. Having worked up a rapacious appetite on the tough climb to the top, we threw down our bags on the next patch of grass we hit, ripped them open, and stuffed our faces. I tore into some ham and cheese sandwiches, crisps, and a handful of peanuts generously donated by Crazy Frank. I admit that doesn't sound like a Christmas dinner fit for the Queen, but 5 hours of scaling a mountain can make cat food taste like caviar. Getting back into our stride after our break proved difficult and worsening weather conditions didn't help. The sky turned from a blissful blue to a grisly grey. A balmy breeze became a gusty gale and the temperature changed from cool and comfortable to bitter and Baltic. For a short while, I wallowed in self-pity. I was freezing cold, my hands had gone numb and my ankles, knees and hips were aching. I asked myself, why the hell did I take the summer off work to put myself through such an ordeal? I wondered if my knee pain was serious and if I'd have to abandon the walk and call Natalia to come pick me up and nurse me back to health with daily bed baths, nighttime stories, and hourly foot tickles. I was feeling so weak that for a brief moment I doubted I would even make it that far. Then I had a flashback to a calamitous episode when Chappers and I conquered Mount Snowdon in Wales. On a bright and sunny spring morning, we pulled up at the base of Snowdon and sat in the car debating whether or not trekking to the top was a good idea. Given that we had bags of belief, a tin of baked beans, and great weather conditions, we were both up for it. Everything was going golden, absolutely hunky-dory, until the weather turned, throwing its full box of tricks at us. First, our visibility was reduced to a few metres by thick mountain mist. Then we were pelted with a confetti of hailstones the size of cooking apples, soaked to our freezing bones by torrential rain, and pinned back by a bullying wind. We thought about turning back, but kept going, motivated by talk of getting a hot bevy in a cafe we knew awaited us at the peak. Against all the odds, we got to the summit. Seeing the cafe in front of us was heaven. Finding the doors locked was hell. To make matters worse, Halfway back down, we got lost and had to go all the way to the top again to find the correct trail leading back to our car. It was without doubt the coldest I had ever been in my entire life. So much so that I urinated on my hands to warm them up. I definitely wasn't going to tell Natalia that on our first date, but it did bring some feeling back to my numb hands. I was praying that I had learned from that disastrous experience and history wasn't about to repeat itself. Wrestling my negative thoughts into submission, I declared it was time to man up and smash through the pain barrier. With my second wind on full force, I got an urge to start running. "Crazy Brad!" Crazy Frank shouted, tapping his finger on his temple as I left him and overtook four concerned Frenchmen who couldn't believe their eyes. As I ran past with my backpack bouncing up and down, one of them pointed to his knees, warning of the damage I could do. His advice went in one ear and out the other. Determined to get my blood pumping, release some good endorphins, and warm up my body, I carried on regardless. With Crazy Frank far behind and no one else around, I naturally slowed and sang my heart out in delirious happiness down the vertiginous descent, tipping me into Roncesvalles Vallès. It was only the first day, but I was already having the time of my life. After 6.5 hours of huffing and puffing in the Pyrenees, I hung up my boots for the day around 12:30 p.m. Walking into Roncesvalles was more like striding into a scene from The Sound of Music than my first Spanish town. It was a sleepy settlement tucked into a verdurous valley bed of beech, fir and oak forests where clear skies widened to show off an impressive 13th century church imitating the design of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris. Apart from a monastery, a broad white building of 3 floors directly opposite the church, there were no dwellings, no apartments, flats or houses to be seen. I guessed that Roncesvalles' population of just 21 inhabitants must all belong to the church and live and work in the 2 small hotels situated either side of the single carriageway bisecting the community. Arriving at the albergue, located in the monastery, I was disappointed to be hit with the news it didn't open until 4. With no other option than to use my time wisely, I paid €5 in advance for a bed, rinsed my walking clothes in a nearby stream, hung them out to dry, and booked a table for an evening meal in the village's only restaurant. Crazy Frank got there soon after and came and sat with me to soak up some rays outside the albergue. Like a typical sun-starved Englishman, I ripped off my t-shirt, kicked off my boots, and lay back on a patch of grass. Crazy Frank followed suit, and as he peeled off his Pyrenean layers, bearing his pale pigeon chest, he made me chuckle with another lyric, this time from Right Said Fred. "I'm so sexy for my shirt," he sang, drumming his chest, Tarzan style. Little by little, the crazy was coming out of the Frank. When the albergue opened late afternoon, I was the first person through the door. This privilege allowed me to choose a good hard bed, take a shower with hot water, I was soon to find this was something of a rarity in an albergue, and grab a power nap. Everything was going so very well, until my slumber was blown apart by a familiar sound and smell. To my horror, lying way too close for comfort, was Snorkosaurus. To save space, his bed had been pushed so close to mine, we might as well have booked a king's size to share. The night before, I'd slept above him. Now, we were spooning. I got out of there quick fast and went out to meet some of the characters rolling down the mountain into town. I got chatting to 4 likeable Canadians, Allison and Katrina, 2 bonny ladies in their mid-20s, and Bob and Margaret, an elderly couple who'd taken 10 tiring hours to drag themselves over the Pyrenees. The pair of them were in a lot of pain and were hobbling about after their extreme exertions. Being addicted to running and having a job that required me to play football with tireless kids all day, I was lucky. I hadn't had to do any extra training for my long walk. Bob and Margaret, on the other hand, talked of how they'd trained for 2 years to get in shape for the Camino. Willing them on, I told them I admired their courage, dedication, and determination to see their goal through to the end. When my new Maple Leaf mates left me for the albergue, I popped into a tourist shop in a building attached to the church to inquire if they sold earplugs. After rigorously rehearsing a sentence I'd pieced together using my Spanish phrasebook, I strode in with the confidence of a local, flamenco stamped at the counter, and hit them with it. Las cosas para enchufar aquí? The things for plugging in here, I requested, sticking my fingers in my ears. The señora standing by the till gave me a look of horror, like I'd just asked her to pop a spot on my back. Without saying a word, she scurried off and returned with a colleague. I repeated my request to her co-worker. English, please, she pleaded, equally stumped. Ear plugs, I said, sticking my fingers in my ears again. As the penny finally dropped, she pulled a set off a hook behind the counter and I thanked them for their patience. It was only later on that I found out from Allison, who spoke fluent Spanish, that I'd actually asked them to electrocute me through my ears. Tapones, she informed me, was the magic word that would keep me out of future trouble. I had no plans to attend Mass in the village church at 8 p.m., but when invited by Allison and Katrina, I decided to be sociable, tag along, and join the party. Instead of experiencing some sort of union with God, Jesus, or the Holy Spirit, what I mostly felt was annoyance at the priest, dressed in a shiny green robe, for making us continually stand up and sit down. Doing squats on the pews like we were taking part in a prayer aerobic session after nigh on 30 kilometres of mountain hiking certainly won't go down as one of my most divine experiences. Staying in bed, scratching Snorkosaurus's back might well have been more relaxing. The evening meal was a much more enjoyable affair, for which I made sure my arse remained planted throughout. Crazy Frank and I shared a table with Stefan and Sasha, both 19-year-old interior design students from Vienna. I instantly connected with the lads and told them tales of my friends, Martin and Robert, two of their compatriots from the South Austrian province of Carinthia. While we waited for our special discounted pilgrim's menu of soup followed by grilled fish and fries for €9, I tried to impress them with an Austrian expression Martin and Robert had taught me. Kittelhofer Herr Gitz Schnudel? I said, and waited for them both to throw their heads back in fits of laughter. To my surprise and disappointment, I got no reaction. Sasha scratched his head in confusion and asked me to jot it down. Kittelhofer Herr Gitz Schnudel. I scribbled into the back page of my journal and pushed it across the table for them to read. Eyeing my words carefully, he corrected my spelling. Kittel, Aufi, hier, gibt's, Schniedel. I think you write it like this, but I am not sure what it means. Sasha was trying his best to be polite and sound interested when really, I think he wanted to change tables. It means, I said, doing a drum roll on the table before letting them have it, lift your skirts, girls, here we serve sausages. The macho backslaps I'd hoped for upon demonstrating my knowledge of this crucial Austrian expression weren't forthcoming. I think your friends are maybe a little crazy, Stefan said, unmoved. We are from Vienna, not Carinthia, and not saying this? Poor Crazy Frank sat with us, not understanding a word of the skirts and sausages debate. Whenever possible, though, I tried to include him in the all-English exchange by asking him if the dinner was good. I just can't get enoughs, he would reply every time, patting his belly and wailing his own version of the soft cell song. As the restaurant slowly emptied and the staff began resetting the vacated tables, Crazy Frank poked me in the shoulder. 9:30 o'clock, he said, tapping his watch, warning me of the need to return to the albergue before its fast-approaching 10 p.m. curfew. When we got back there, the hall was packed with more than 100 pilgrims sleeping, talking, and snoring in barrack-style bunks. On his way to bed, after brushing his teeth in the bathroom, Crazy Frank asked me to get him up again in the morning. Please, Awake me up before you go-go? Trying not to disturb those already sleeping with my laughter, I tiptoed off to bed and dropped off with that bloody Wham song torturing my brain. I thought I'd done everything necessary to ensure a decent night's sleep at last. I deployed my earplugs to silence the flaring nostrils of a dribbling snorkosaurus just an arm's length away. I transformed my bandana into a blindfold to shield my eyes from the torch wielders. And I'd buried my head into my sleeping bag so the sweaty socks and fetid body odour fouling the air couldn't sting my tormented nostrils a moment longer. Despite all that, in the small hours, I was rudely awoken by an Italian ragazzo shouting into his mobile phone. Feeling totally helpless, I lay there for a while, too tired to move, but wishing I had the energy to jump out of bed and shout, "Shut up, your face!" As my frustration was about to boil over and I moved to get out of bed and pull that horrible man's leg hairs, an old lady came to my rescue. With a good old-fashioned finger-wagging and verbal volley, she put him firmly in his place. Not a moment too soon. The selfish swine hung up and walked away to go sit on the naughty chair. I returned to the land of Nod, dreaming of secretly putting rocks in his rucksack.